This webcast is a service of South Dakota Public Broadcasting. More information at sd.net.
We're going to get going here. We had promised that it would only be about an hour and a half meeting. Going to let you know that we are live streaming our meeting. It is being recorded live and will be then placed on the boards and commission site, which is where our agenda and minutes are posted. Can you go to the next slide, April? So our meeting today is a little bit short. I'm going to just walk us through the agenda. We are going to do a roll call, and then what we're going to do is review with you our state performance plan, an annual performance report for federal fiscal year 2015 that is going to be submitted the 1st of February. I also need to review with you a little bit about some ICC membership updates. And then we'll have an adjournment. So there's going to be a lot of numbers and data that we're going to present to you today. I did send out this morning a copy of the PowerPoint presentation, but there will be a portion where Steve, when he talks specifically about our SPP APR, he will be going live into the site where we actually enter our data. Where it's a little bit different today, we do not have a chair or a coach or chair elect who is able to join our meeting. So I'm actually going to call the meeting to order, and I will just kind of fill in that role today. So with that, I'm going to call the meeting to order at 10:15. Is there a motion to approve the agenda as presented?
So moved.
So moved by Sarah. Is there a second?
This is Lisa, I'll second.
Second by Lisa Sanderson, thank you. All those in favor, please respond by saying aye.
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 Opposed, same sign. All right, we will go ahead and get started. So I'm gonna start with a roll call. Sarah Aker,
here. Now Sarah, this is April. I have muted many people in order to not have feedback. So if we call on you and you can't respond, go ahead and say here in the chat box and I'll relay that to our record keeper.
Okay, Jolynn Bostrom. I think I saw your name.
She's
up there.
Here.
Kim Brink. Sarah Brown. Dr. Gadam. Okay. Cindy Fisher, Brittany Green.
I believe Brittany is here. She's online.
Melody.
Melody's here.
And I'm not going to pronounce your last name because I won't say it right. Barb Hemmelman, I know you're on. Michelle Lott is going to be joining us a little bit later. Carol Forsch, I think I heard you earlier, Carol. John New.
Yep, John's here.
Rebecca Polstra will be joining us later. Lisa Sanderson, I heard you earlier. Christy Sweer.
Yes, I'm here.
Great, good morning. Christy Sweer. Yeah. And Elizabeth.
Elizabeth's on.
And Elizabeth is on as well. Okay, so we've got our attendance then. I'm going to, if you can move to the next slide. As I said, the purpose of today's meeting is to appraise you, the ICC members, of the federal fiscal year 2015 state performance plan and annual performance report. Note that I will refer to this throughout the meeting as the SPP APR. Again, another one of those acronyms for you. This report is done annually, and it is the Federal Office of Special Education and Programs, otherwise referred to as OSEP, on February 1. The federal fiscal year 2015 includes performance of the birth to three from July 1 of 2015 to June 30th of 2016. So I want you to keep that in mind because it is January 2017. So this will seem like old data, but that's how the reporting cycle works. If you recall back to, I think it was last spring or last summer when we had our ICC kind of an orientation meeting, we gave you all those little cards, little hard plastic cards, and we referred to those, and on those cards were the 11 indicators that Part C is accountable for. The report that we go through today is going to reflect on each of those indicators. If you look to the very last few back pages of the what I sent you this morning, I had listed out those indicators and what and their definition of one of each one. When Steve comes on and starts going through them each one independently, you can refer to those sheets for information. But before we dive into that, I want to give you just, if we go to the next slide, I want to give you just some federal fiscal year 2015 data that is not necessarily reported on the SPP APR, but for you as ICC members, is good data for you to know, to understand our program and kind of where we're at. Now remember, this is 2015, federal fiscal year 2015, so keep that date range that you see at the top and know that that's, again, it's almost a year and a half later, but that's what it is. So for federal fiscal year 2015, we have an official one-day child count. And for South Dakota, that's December 1 of every year is our one-day child count. If you're familiar with school districts and things, you know that the last Friday in September is their one-day count. That's similar for us. We have that one-day federal that's our count. So December 1 of 2015, which was, again, over a year ago, was 1,174 children were in our program. We also keep track of our cumulative count, and by cumulative, we look at from July 1 of 2015 to June 30 of 2016. In that whole year, non-duplicative, how many kiddos did we have in our program? And during that federal fiscal year, we had 2,238. Now, the difference between those two is because we're a 12-month program and we have kids coming and going all throughout the year. So that's what the difference is. But just some, again, I've got some more data here for you. We serve in 15, 62% of our kids were male and 38% were female. It's quite a difference, but that is very reflective of over the years.
Historical.
Historically, we serve almost twice as many males as females. And then just a breakdown of how old are our kids when they're in our program. 13% during that fiscal year fell between the birth to 1 year of age. 34% fell between 1 to 2 year. And 53% fell between 2 and 3 year. And again, that's very, there's no major difference from previous years. This is very much common. We receive a lot of referrals for kids in that 2 year range. And we reflect that to probably went for a 2 year checkup or, you know, developmentally, that's when a lot of things start happening and when there's some noticeable perhaps delays or concerns of families. So there's just a breakdown. This next slide then, I just wanted to show you over a 10 year span where child count has gone. The dark blue line, or bar, excuse me, is the one-day December count for each of those years, federal fiscal years. The light blue bar is the cumulative count. So you can see that our count has gradually risen. However, in 2014, we had a significant, that was our highest year ever. We had a huge jump. But now this year in 2015, we went back down. We're not exactly sure why. It's hard to say, but this is what our data is. Just so you know, too, we have another meeting in February that I'll talk about more towards the end. December of 2016, Steve is working on that data right now, and we'll share that with you at our next meeting. But here's a breakdown. I know it's really hard to see, and I apologize, but this is a breakdown by the regions that serve birth to three. And you can see for the last 5 years how their child count has gone. Notice that the second set over is our Center for Disabilities, and you can see how they have just skyrocketed the last 2 years. Most regions took a really big jump in that 2014 child count, and some have had some slight decreases in 2015, but there is still an obvious need for birth to three. Here is a breakdown of our kiddos according to federal race, and you can see here that we have it broken down as we reported out. And the percentages here are very much reflective of the population base of South Dakota. We watch this very closely to make sure that we are serving our minority families and that we are reaching all of the counties and the different areas. The other thing that we look at and we keep close tabs on as well is how do kids come into the program? How are they found eligible? And you'll see the largest percent, almost 80%, are by that standard deviation, meaning those scores, they fell such that their scores deem them eligible. We have some kids, you know, the next largest one is the medical diagnosis. 16% come in according to a medical diagnosis. And that we have seen an increase over recent years. It used to fall more like 10% or less, but we have seen an increase in that area. The really small sliver, 1%, are those premature babies who are 28 weeks or less. And then we do have another small sliver that is informed clinical opinion. And I don't know if there's anybody on the team here from birth to three that wants to speak to any of those.
With medical diagnosis, this is Crystal, I'm thinking that would be the torticollis diagnosis, that we have a lot of physicians really into referring children with torticollis. That's my guess.
We also have a lot of children who come to us with a diagnosis of Down syndrome upon birth, but the delays don't start showing up until they get a little bit older. So they often test very compatible with their peers when they're first born, but as they get older, then you see those test scores start dropping. So they often come in with medical diagnosis as well.
Thank you. Okay, the next slide then is a reflection of prolonged assistance. And you might be familiar, South Dakota is very unique. We are the only state that we're aware of who has this category. And just to remind you, and I'll ask Crystal to jump in at any time, in South Dakota, there are, according to children's scores, children can be determined as in need of prolonged assistance. And what that means is these are the kiddos that have significant delays that are very involved. And these are kiddos that will most likely need special education service all throughout their K-12. And so here is a breakdown of our child count of how that falls out. There are 27% of our kids that are prolonged. Now, the other thing with prolonged assistance to keep in mind is if the child is found in need of prolonged assistance, we have a wonderful relationship with our school districts, and then that the school districts take on the responsibility. They're still considered Part C kiddos, but the school districts provide the early intervention services as well as take on the cost of those services. Anything else we want to add for that? Okay. So it's just a piece of data that's good for us in South Dakota to track because it is unique to us. So again, once kiddos are in the program, where are families served? If you remember, birth to three federally is early intervention services are to be in a natural environment. So we do have to report this at one point throughout the year is where are the kiddos and families served? And so the first category, the big blue, that 80%, that is the home. Families are served in the natural environment or their homes. That 20% is a program designed for typically developing children. That could probably be a daycare, other areas in a community where typically developing children would normally gather. So I don't know if there's any other examples you guys want to give besides childcare.
What's that? Play groups.
Play groups, library, YMCAs, community centers, you know, could be in the summertime, it could be a park. That's pretty much it.
Yeah. So, and then the other, while it shows 0%, the percent was actually less than 0%. We do have cases where families are served in an area other than the blue and the red. It might be a clinic because that is the only thing available in the community and the family chooses not to have it done in the home. So, and that is possible. So, again, just wanted you to see where families are served, families and children. So for federal fiscal year 2015, remember there was a cumulative count and then there was the one-day count. Well, the difference between those two are the children that exit our program during that July to June timeframe. And during that time, we had, 1,060 children exited our program. When they exit our program, we also keep a close record on when they exited, why did they exit? So 16% graduated prior to age 3. What that means is those are the kiddos that met their outcomes and no longer needed birth to three services. So those are huge success stories for us. There's 20% that stayed till age 3, but when we did an exit assessment, they found that they wouldn't be eligible for Part C services. So maybe they stayed till age 3, but when we did that final assessment on them, their scores were such that they no longer qualified. Again, another big success story for us. 46% were found to be Part B eligible. So when they left the program, they were eligible if they wanted to go on to receive Part B services. And there's 18% of the kiddos that are undetermined. And what happens with those 18% is while we try to get exits on each child that leaves the program, there are cases where kids move out of state or we're unable to contact them. We have families that move in the middle of the night and don't tell anyone. And in the worst case scenarios, we have kiddos that pass away while they're in our program. So there's a small percent that we just can't get those the data on for this. So that is just some FYI information, I guess, for you as ICC members to have in your knowledge base. So if people start asking you questions, you can really speak to who we serve and what we're doing. Not quite yet. What I'm going to do in a little bit is we're going to turn this over to Steve in just a moment. We're now going to get into the actual federal report and what is being submitted. What you have in front of you on the screen is what's called Grads 360. This is the online link at the top, but this is where we actually go in and enter our data. Every state goes in and enters their data on this. I wanted you to see this because anyone is able to go into this link and look not only at Part C. You'll see in the right corner there's a B and a C. You can go in and look at not only South Dakota's information, you can look at any Part C state in the nation and any Part B. Note, though, if you were to go in today, you would only see up through federal fiscal year 14 because states haven't entered their 15 data yet. But this is where we'll be reporting it. The next slide, then, I want you to see is just a reminder of what those 11 reporting indicators are. Steve's going to go through them one by one, but I just wanted this as kind of a cheat sheet for you. We have 3 compliance indicators, which means that it's 100% is expected, and that's C1, C7, and C8. And then we have 7 results indicators. Note, though, C11, which is our state systemic improvement plan, we won't be reporting any information on that today because that portion is not due until April 1. Of 2017. So if we'll go to the next slide, what we're going to do now is we're going to take just a moment and transfer over to where Steve can be the presenter, and he is going to pull up the Grads 360 site live and show you the data for each of the indicators. If you look in the handouts that I gave you, note the next few slides actually are I've listed out the indicator and then the definition of the indicator. So you can go on and just follow along with that if you'd like. So we'll just take a second here to transfer.
Go ahead, Steve. I'll get adjusted. This is just my computer, so.
Okay. I don't think we're live yet for me. That's still
Steve, what are...
Can you present on my desktop?
I think that's what she's saying right now.
Okay, so I'm presenting and I want to present the desktop, right?
I think that's what they're seeing right there on the window.
And they're seeing that.
We're seeing April's, yeah.
Because
1 second, bear with me here. So here's what you're seeing.
Did you go down here and click on that? Or that desktop? Okay. And hit present. Okay. Okay, now go to the screen you want to present.
Okay. There it goes. Thanks, April. Yeah, I appreciate that. As Sarah said, this is our, and one thing, I'm not a loud speaker, so if you could turn me up a little bit, or if you guys hard to hear me, you may have to turn your volume up a little bit. As Sarah said, I'm going to show you just the indicator data for each one of the indicators and the targets and the history of each one of the indicators. So I'm going to jump right in. And of course, this is the website that she was talking about earlier. And I'm going to go right to indicator one. Indicator one is timely provision of service. It's the percent of infants and toddlers with IFSPs who received early intervention services on their IFSPs in a timely manner. And in South Dakota, we've defined timely as being 30 days from the start date of the child's IFSP. And so what we're looking at is that services begin from at least 30 days or less from when the parent signs that IFSP. It is 100% compliance indicator, so OSEP has set the targets under our historical data box here. All of the targets are at 100%, and the state's data is right below the target. And then it shows it for each year up to 2014. Then if you look down below, we have the 100% targets for federal fiscal year 15 through 2018. Now for the federal fiscal year data, excuse my moving around here. Okay, so we had 386 kids who had an initial IFSP or a review meeting where they added a new service to a child's IFSP. The 386 represents a quarter of the year. We are allowed to do sampling on this indicator, and we sampled from January 1, 2016 through March 31st of 2016. And we had a total of 386 kids, or the number of infants and toddlers with IFSPs. And then the number of infants and toddlers with IFSPs who received early intervention services on their IFSPs in a timely manner was 375. But there was a number of documented delays attributable to exceptional family circumstances, and we had 11 of those. So if you add the 11 and the 375, you come up with 386. So we're at 100% for our federal fiscal year 2015 data, and right next to that is the target of 100, so we met this target. Indicator one, timely services. Questions on indicator one? I'll pause after each one while we get set up. So if you have a question, go ahead and unmute or put that in the chat box, and we'll answer them as we go through them. Indicator two, services in natural environments. It's the percent of infants and toddlers with IFSPs who primarily receive early intervention services in the home or community-based setting.
We have a question from the queue. John is asking, I should probably know this, but what is considered an acceptable family delay?
Great question.
Actually, any of them would be, could be the child got sick on that day and they didn't want to get services, so they postponed it till a couple of weeks. Really, it could be just about anything. The parent just cancels. Or...
Yeah, this is Crystal. I see a lot more of those reasons on the IFSPs, and it's a lot about families not being able to meet that appointment for whatever reason. That's a family exceptional circumstance. Could be a death in the family, child sick, like Steve said, they're going on vacation, you name it. Anything family driven is okay because our providers made the service available. And so the family could not meet that.
And he's replied, thanks. Yeah. So just those life circumstances
yes.
that happen.
And actually weather can be part of that as well. Sometimes when we have an unusual amount of blizzards or something fun like that, we want everyone to be safe.
Okay, any other questions? Okay, we'll move on to indicator 2, services and natural environments. It's the percent of infants and toddlers with IFSPs who primarily receive early intervention services in the home or a community-based setting. This is a results indicator, and the state ICC a number of years back set these targets for us, and those are on the top line underneath each of the years, and then the state's data is below each of those targets. So this is our historical data through the years up to 2014. And then the next box down is the targets that were set for 2015 through 2018. So for federal fiscal year data, we had 1,174 kids with IFSPs, and then the number of infants and toddlers with IFSPs who primarily received early intervention services in the home or a community-based setting was 1,072. Now, they bring, this is the data that from our 12/1/2015 child count that we already reported last year in a different data system, but they've pulled that data from the other system here and placed it under the pre-populated data, and that's where we're getting our numbers here. All of this was reported just after child count last year.
Steve, this is Sarah. If I could interrupt for just a moment.
Sure.
I just want to clarify, if you saw my slide earlier that said, you know, so many percent are in the home and so many percent are in a community-like setting, for OSEP's purposes, they combine the home setting and the setting that is for
typically
where families would gather yeah. together. So note that those two are combined together, and that's why the data shows it this way.
And we came up with 99.83% for the data, FFY 2015 data. And our target for this year was 96.8. So we met the target for indicator 2, services in natural environments. Questions on indicator 2? You can speak out or put it in the chat box. Okay, indicator 3, early childhood outcomes. Just to give you a little bit more information about this, what we're talking about is children come into the program, they get evaluated, and we use the BDI, the BDI-2, the Battelle Developmental Inventory Second Edition is the test. And kids come into the program, and then they're and get tested, and then they leave the program, they get tested again, and we try and get as many exit tests as possible. And then we use the scoring to give us our percentages for each of the outcome areas. So with that, indicator 3, early childhood outcomes, is the percent of infants and toddlers with IFSPs who demonstrate improved A, positive social-emotional skills, B, acquisition and use of knowledge and skills, and C, the use of appropriate behaviors to meet their needs. This is a results indicator, and a number of years back, the state ICC set the targets for us, and that's what we're looking at here in the historical data box. Note that there's two, what do I want to call that, two summary statements for each of the outcomes up above. And I'll talk about the summary statements in just a minute, but each summary statement has to have a target. And then, as you can see on A1 under 2009, we had 44.90, and then the state's data was, at that time, 44.90. That was kind of our base year, but just to show you that there is two targets for each of the outcomes, and then our data on how the state performed over the years from 2009 to 2014. And then the targets in the box below for the federal fiscal year 2015 through 2018 are already established, set by the ICC a number of years ago. So now we'll look at the 2015 Indicator 3 data in each of those three outcome areas. Sorry, it's doing a lot of jumping around. 1 second. Okay, so what we're looking at here is just outcome A. And again, I need to give you that little bit of background that we test kids coming into the program and we test them when they leave the program using the BDI. And we had 1,060 kids exit in federal fiscal year 2015, and we had 687 of those kids had an initial and an exit BDI. So if OSEP does look at the completion rate, they want us to be around 60%. Well, we need to be at 65% in order to get the points for that portion. And this year, we just made the 65% of our kids had an initial and an exit BDI. So that was a big step for our service coordinators this year, and they've been working hard at getting that up.
Steve, I want to interrupt you. You're being very modest about this. This is very, very huge for the Birth to Three program. If you remember, again, at a previous meeting where we were going through our state determinations and we were showing you how OSEP was holding states accountable, and at the end of all of their formulas, you could be found in meets requirements or needs assistance. You know, there was all those different categories. South Dakota was found in needs assistance by 1 point when they put it all together. And so when we went through, Steve has done a tremendous amount of work looking at the formula, and he had said to us all along, if we can get our completion rate up to that 65%, we should, knock on wood, be able to get out of that needs assistance. So this is huge. 2 years ago, I think we were at like 40%.
Yeah, in the 40s.
In the 40s. So we have jumped 20-some percentage points to get to the 65. And a lot of it is from our service coordinators, their hard work. Again, when we talked to you about our exits, that 18% that we couldn't find, that number used to be a lot bigger. But they have really worked hard to get exits. But it also comes to Steve. When we restructured our office,
Steve became the data person, and one of his things is monthly, he looks at who has left the program, and he goes back and checks with service coordinators to say, have we gotten an exit? Have we gotten an exit? So falls to the service coordinators and also to you, Steve. This is very, very big for us. So as long as they don't change the formula next year, we're hopeful to be out of that needs assistance category. Sorry to interrupt you.
Okay, thank you. Just know that the 65% is probably going to be the maximum number of kids that were. It's going to be tight every year because kids who leave the program, you know, we're unable to locate them or they move out of state. There's just nothing we can do to get those scores. So,
and there's also those kids that are in the program less than 6 months. Federally, we are not to count them. That counts towards our exits, but kids that are in the program less than 6 months, we can't do an exit assessment on them. So that automatically eliminates them, but it still figures, if you think of it as that, in that equation on the N, the bottom, they're still thrown in that N for us.
Okay. And then you had mentioned that it might take us out of needs assistance this year, but based on what I'm going to be showing you next, we could have some other issues.
We don't know. It depends on the formula.
Just so you know, that the results-driven accountability system that they use all focuses around indicator 3 and the completion rate and our percentages and stuff. So this is where it all boils down to. So let's take a look at outcome A. This is positive social emotional skills. And we talked about how many exits we had and our completion rate up above. But this next step, I'm just going to call it the federal ECHO calculator. And I'll run through this top one, and then the same will apply for outcome B and C. So of the 687 kids who had an initial and exit BDI test, 18 of those fell in category A, infants and toddlers who did not improve functioning. 82 of the 687 kids fell in category B, infants and toddlers who improved functioning but not sufficient to move near to functioning comparable to same age peers. 36 fell in infants and toddlers who improved functioning to a level near to same age peers, but did not reach it. And 58 of the kids out of the 687 with an initial and exit BDI fell in category D, infants and toddlers who improved functioning to reach a level comparable to same age peers. And then we had 493 fall in category E, infants and toddlers who maintain functioning at a level comparable to same age peers. And then it breaks it down by percentages. This E category, the percentage is pretty high. OSAP looks at this, should be 65% or less, or they're thinking that we have a data anomaly of some kind when we do our breakdown of A through E's. Now the second portion of the calculator, what it does is takes the data that we have above and summarizes it into two summary statements. And summary statement one is, of those children who entered or exited the program below age expectation in outcome A, the percent who substantially increased their rate of growth by the time they turned 3 years of age or exited the program.
Steve, we have a question from
yes.
The queue. Barb Hellman has asked, do you look at the numbers specific to how long they were in the program?
No, but they need to be in the program at least 6 months, or we can't use them for child outcome purposes. Okay, so then back to summary statement one. The way we figure that is we add C and D together and come up with 94 for the numerator. And then you add A, B, and C together for our denominator, and then divide the two, which comes up to 48.45% for our FY 2015 data. And then summary statement two says the percent of infants and toddlers who are functioning within age expectations in outcome A by the time they turn 3 years of age or exited the program. The way you figure that is you add D and E together for the numerator, and then you add A through E, all of them together, to get our denominator. Then divide 551 by 687, and you get 80.20% for our federal fiscal year 2015 data. Right next to our 2015 data, we have our targets. And as you can see, we did not meet our target in either of the summary statements for outcome A. Make sense? I'll move on to outcome B. I won't go through each of how to calculate it, but our data came out. Our 2015 data was for summary statement one was 50%, and for summary statement two it was 64.05, and again we did not meet our target. Outcome C, we had 46.15% for our 2015 data. In summary statement two, we had 80.82%, and we did not meet our targets in those areas. One thing I will say about the targets, when it comes to OSEP making their state determinations, using the results a driven accountability formula, they don't compare us to our targets, they compare us to the other states and grade us on the curve. So I won't know that until all of the data is put out there, but it is concerning that we're not meeting the targets. But if some of you will remember a few years back, we redid our business rules that take the data to our A through E categories. One of the reasons that our stakeholders had brought up in the past that is our the lack of consistency that might be used in using the BDI tool. And across the evaluators, we felt the need for continuous training for new staff and to update the skills of experienced staff doing the BDI. And this year in November, we had our first two-day BDI training up in Aberdeen. I believe there was 28 evaluators from that region of the state that attended, and we were looking at having another two-day training, I believe, out in Rapid City in February.
Steve, we have another question from the queue from Barb.
Okay.
I think it would be really interesting to know if the child was seen less than 1 year, if they were in the category that met age peers, or if they were the ones that didn't meet.
That would be interesting data to have, and something that we could use as justification, Barb. But OSEP, in their regards, it doesn't matter. But I mean, it would be something that we look at and continue to look at as Steve's position develops. But again, it's just of those kids that exited, no matter, and take out the ones that were in less than 6 months, of those kids, what were their scores, period? Even if they only had services one time, or well, actually it has to be greater than 6 months. But if they were in for 3 years or 8 months, it doesn't matter in their reporting at this time.
Now, one thing that I'll let you know, sorry, Steve, is there is reauthorization happening right now with special education, and I am serving on the Part C group that is working on some reauthorization ideas to bring forward to OSEP. And these are things that we're taking into account and asking them to rethink how long they've been in the program, as well as, you know, those kids that are in the program less than 6 months, not having that count against, quote unquote, a program, when in fact that's probably our really true success stories.
This is April. If I can add on to that, Barb, your thoughts about the scores and where they fall, I think have echoed a lot of our thoughts over the years. A couple of things that come to mind for me are that, number one, we know that the BDI is not real sensitive to picking up social-emotional concerns, and the new BDI that will be coming out within the next 5 years is supposed to be a little bit more sensitive to that. So it seems like our kiddos always score high on social-emotional. Not all states use the BDI. About 12 of us do, I think. So that's one thing that we watch closely. The second thing is that the vast majority of the kids that come into Birth to Three come in with speech. So the knowledge and skills portion is the one where we had like 40-some percent that were same-age peers. That doesn't surprise us because those are the speech kiddos. And they always score high on social-emotional unless they have dual issues going on. So it didn't surprise us to see that a lot of kids score high in social emotional and low in knowledge and skills, because that's exactly why they're coming in. But it goes right back to what Sarah said, that it doesn't matter to OSEP at all. And I see Barb made another comment about, I think it could really assist in the importance of early referrals if it reflected that waiting until age two to refer.
Agreed.
So, but thank you for the comment about it. It's something we watch really closely, too, because if we could change those percentages a little bit, it would maybe help us gain a point and get even further away from needs assistance and better into the meets requirements.
Okay, thanks, April. Also, back in August, went to a Improving Data, Improving Outcomes conference. And I mentioned this at our last ICC webinar, but we got one-on-one practically with some of these people at the TA centers, and we did look at our business rules. I won't get into the weeds about it today, but in the near future, we are working on tweaking those business rules that divide up the A through E categories, and we'll probably be showing you that in the next couple of meetings that we have. Okay, indicator four is family involvement. It's the percent of families participating in Part C who report that early intervention services have helped the family A, know their rights, B, effectively communicate their child's needs, and C, help their children develop and learn. It's a results indicator, so the state ICC set the targets a number of years back. And if you look under the historical data box, you'll see our targets, and the state data below each target for each of the outcome areas for indicator four. In the box below that is our 2015 through 2018 targets that were set a number of years ago by the ICC. The 2015 data that we're going to report this year. in federal fiscal year 2015, a total of 974 surveys were distributed to Part C families. 372 of those were returned for a response rate of 38.2%. And this is a 5.4% increase in the return rate over federal fiscal year 2014. Now, here in this first box, the number of respondent families participating in Part C is the 372 surveys that we got back. And then you'll notice there's an A1, an A2, a B1, B2, C1, C2 that corresponds with each of the outcome areas. And what happens, even though we got 372 surveys back, if we look at A2, the number of responses to the question of whether early intervention services help the family know their rights was 371 because somebody didn't answer that question. So that's going to be our denominator for figuring out our percentages for did they know their rights. And so if we look at A1, the number of respondent families participating in Part C who report early interventions have helped them know their rights. So what they're saying here is that they agree or strongly agree with that statement. 360 of them, 68, said that. Out of the 371 that answered the question, for a 99.19% for our 2015 data that we're going to report. And then the same is true for each one of those. So if we look at B1, this is the number of responses who report early interventions help their family effectively communicate their child's needs was 365. The number of responses to the question effectively communicate their needs was 369. So you take 365 divided by 369 gives us the 98.92% for our 2015 data. And then looking at C1, the number of respondent families participating in Part C who report that early interventions help the family help their child develop and learn, 364 agreed or strongly agreed with that question. And then compared to the number of responses, which was 370, you divide 364 by 370, you get 98.38% for our 2015 data that we're going to report. Next to those is our targets. And we met each target for each of the outcome areas of know your rights, effectively communicate their child's needs, and help their child develop and learn.
This is Crystal butting in quick. I have the joy of seeing all the great comments on the back of the surveys that are just written by the parents. And it's just awesome to hear how great they think our program is. And then I take the information, I share it with the service coordinators. So then they pass it on to the providers if needed, you know, because sometimes they'll mention a particular provider. So what I'm hearing, what I love hearing, is more parents are saying, not only did my therapist help my child, they helped teach me what to do with my child. And I'm really focusing in on those comments because we're really promoting family engagement and more of a coaching model in the future. So parents are wanting that for the most part. So that's pretty cool.
Thank you. I appreciate that. It adds more to the conversation than just a bunch of numbers. Any questions on indicator 4, family involvement? Indicator 5 is child find. It's the percent of infants and toddlers birth to one with IFSPs compared to the national data. It is a results indicator, and the ICC set our targets, and our state data is right below each target, and our historical data runs from 2006 to 2014, and how we compare to our targets over those years. The next box is our targets moving forward from 2015 to 2018. The 2015 data that we're going to report this pre-populated data box that you're looking there, the second one down under data, that number, the 12,419, comes from estimated U.S. Census data. And the 157 comes from our December 1 child count from 2015. And that was entered into a different database, but OSEP pulled from that database and pre-populated that information for us here. And then if you go into the under the 2015 SPR data, you have the 2,419 kids as the population of infants and toddlers birth to one. And then the number of infants and toddlers birth to one with IFSPs was 157. Divide 157 by the 12,419 and you get 1.26% of our kids in the state are on an IFSP. And they're less than one. Our target was 0.82%. So we met our target for this indicator. Now it says compared to national data, the national data for indicator 5 is 1.2%.
So we're very close with nationally.
Yeah, we're right at 1.26. So we're right there compared to national data. Questions on indicator 5? Moving on to 6, child find birth to age 3. Percent of infants and toddlers birth to 3 with IFSPs compared to the national data. Under the historical data box, you're seeing our targets and our data, our state data, right below the target for each of the years from 2006 to 2014. And then in the next box is our targets moving forward from 2015 to 2018. Our federal fiscal year 2015 data that we're going to report. The pre-populated data box, the 37,086 kids is an estimated U.S. Census data. For states, and the 1174 is our December 1, 2015 child count number, and they pulled this data in and pre-populated this for us, and so if we take the 1174 divided by the 37,000, we get 3.17% for our 2015 data that we're going to report. Our target was 2.81, and so we met our target. And the national data average is 3%. So we're just over the national data. Questions on indicator 6? Indicator 7 is the 45-day timeline. It's the percent of infants and toddlers with IFSPs for whom an initial evaluation, an initial assessment, an initial IFSP meeting were conducted within 45 days from referral. We look at it, would we get a referral, the service coordinator needs to meet and greet the family, screen the child, refer to the school for evaluation, get results, send prior notices to the families when the meeting's going to occur. All of this has to be done within 45 days. It is a 100% compliance indicator. OSEP set the targets at 100%, and if you look at our historical data box, the targets are all in there, and our state data is below each target for the years 2006 through 2014. And then our 100% targets moving forward in the future from 2015 to 2018. Our federal fiscal year data that we're going to report. Is the number of eligible infants and toddlers evaluated and assessed for whom an initial IFSP meeting was required to be conducted was 241. Again, we are allowed to sample, and we sampled the date range from January 1 through March 31st of 2016. We had 241 kids who came into the program on an initial IFSP. The number of eligible infants and toddlers with IFSPs for whom an initial evaluation and assessment and an initial IFSP meeting was conducted within the Part C's 45-day timeline was 239. The number of documented delays attributable to exceptional family circumstances was 2. So if we add the 2 to the 239, we get 241 for 100% compliance for our 2015 data. And of course, our target was set at 100%. So we met the target for Indicator 7, the 45-day timeline. Questions on Indicator 7? Indicator 8. Early childhood transition. It's the percentage of toddlers with disabilities exiting the Part C with timely transition planning for whom the lead agency has. A, developed an IFSP with transition steps and services at least 90 days at the discretion of all parties, but not more than 9 months prior to the toddler's third birthday. B, is notified the state education agency and the local education agency where the toddler resides at least 90 days prior to the toddler's third birthday. And C, conducted the transition conference held with approval of the family at least 90 days, but not more than 9 months prior to the child's third birthday. This is a 100% compliance indicator, and OSEP set the target at 100%. We are allowed to sample. We sampled the time frame January 1. To March 31st of 2016, and in that day range we had 166 kids exit the program. Now each A, B, and C are all under their own category, but it's going to utilize the 166 for all three of the outcome areas. So if we go to 8A, which is the transition steps and services at least 90 days before, but not more than 9 months. The target is 100% for all of the years, and then our state data is below that, and the targets moving forward from 2015 to 2018 are all at 100%. The 2015 data that we're going to report is, again, this is a We took a sample from January 1 to March 31st. We had 166 kids exiting Part C. The number of children exiting Part C who have an IFSP with transition steps and services was 163. The number of documented delays attributable to exceptional family circumstances was 3. Add the two together, we get 166, or 100% is what we're going to report for our 2015 data. For outcome A. So B, this is the notification to the schools or the state education agency. Again, our historical data, our targets were all 100, our state's data was all 100, and the targets moving forward will be 100%. What we reported for 2015, is the 166 who exited. And for this one, the notification to the state education agency or the local education agency occurred at least 90 days prior to their third birthday. We had 166. They were all notified for 100%, meeting our target of 100. And indicator 8C, which is the conference itself before at least 90 days, but not more than 9 months. Our historical data, targets were always 100, and then the data, our state's data, right below each of those targets. We've had some bumps in the road a few times over the years, but doing well now. And of course, our targets moving forward are all 100%. The 2015 data that we're going to report is 166 kids exited during that date range, and we had 163 kids where the conference occurred at least 90 days, but not more than 9 months before the child's third birthday. And the number of documented delays was 3. Add the two together, and we get 166 for a percentage of 100% in 2015. And our target was 100, so we met that target. Questions on transition? Okay, indicator 9. Is results sessions, the percent of hearing requests that went to resolution sessions that were resolved through resolution session settlement agreements. We haven't had any, and so we don't have any targets that were set, and we don't have any data to report on those. Mediations, the percent of mediations held that resulted in a mediation agreements. Again, we didn't have any mediations over the years, and we don't have any this year, so we don't have data and targets to report to you on. So, and with that, those are the indicators. Any questions about any of them at all?
This is Sarah. I'm going to speak to indicator 9 and 10. One of the reasons, you know, we've looked at that, why we don't have the resolution and the mediation, is we, here in South Dakota, we take it very seriously when a parent calls with concerns, and we are very proactive to try and work with the family to help resolve any issues before they become escalated into a mediation. And so I really can't express enough thanks to the service coordinators and the providers in our program who work so closely with families, and also to the state team here and in responding quickly to families and really taking the time to explain the program, hear their concerns and help them work through things. So that is really why we don't have mediations and any of the resolution issues. So the beauty of a small state is that they can get to, parents can reach the state office quickly and get a reply back very quickly as well. So again, that's largely why that's attributed to. So if we don't have any questions, I'm going to go back to the PowerPoint. It'll take just a minute to switch users here. And then we have to get to the correct slide. I think it's slide 25, maybe. Keep going. Right there. Oops. So I just wanted to pause on this one. Because it was, we love data, but it can be a little mind-numbing. And so we really needed to present this information to you, the ICC, because federally we are required to present the SPP APR data to our ICC committee members before we submit it, so that we can make sure that you're aware of what's happening and what's being submitted. So again, I apologize. That it can seem a little bit overwhelming, but hopefully if you do have questions, or when we're done today, if something comes up that you wondered about, please feel free to contact Steve. He knows this inside and out and upwards and downwards, and he can try and answer that question for you. So I just have actually one more item that I need to go over with you, and it's the membership updates. If we could go to the next slide. We do have some changes in our membership makeup of the ICC. Susan Anderson, if you recall, was with the Division of Insurance. However, she has moved on to another agency in the state, so she is no longer on our ICC. We will be working with the Division of Insurance to find another member to join our group. If you recall back again to that training several months ago, the makeup of the ICC committee is very structured. It's very prescriptive of who should be represented in this on this group, and purposely they did that. So we'll be looking for a new member. Dr. Vicki Lynn. Vicki resigned from Black Hills State University this past month, and Vicki was on the board serving as a member of a preparation program. Since she's no longer with Black Hills State, she doesn't feel that eligibility. So she also has resigned from the ICC. I'm actually going to be reaching out to the post-secondary to look at other interests, other universities that might be of interest. We've worked with Black Hills, or had a member from Black Hills State for a long time. However, I'm going to be reaching out to South Dakota State University. They have that early childhood development. That's what it was when I graduated. I'm not sure what the major's called now. But they have a major. And so we're going to be working with them to see if there's anyone from that campus that could maybe be part of our group. We also were very happy for Pat Munson that she was able to retire, but we're very sad that she retired. She had been with DSS for many, many years, but she retired also this month, and so she is not on our ICC. Carol Forsch, though, you probably heard her during roll call. She is in the interim position and will be, Carol, am I correct, you'll be joining us on the ICC? Maybe she had to get off, but Carol will be taking her place. The other thing that I just wanted you to think about, we're not going to do anything with it today, but our chair is Mona Droll, who couldn't be with us today. She's in Florida, so we're all jealous of that. Her position is up as the chair, and our chair-elect was Vicki Lynn. And so we find ourselves in a little bit of a unique situation in that we need a chair and a chair-elect for this 2017 year. I did have response from one individual who said he would if no one else jumped up and down. I think I bribed him actually a little bit. But if you're interested in either of those, please let me know. We need a chair who will oversee our meetings for the 2017 year. The chair-elect then will move into the chair position in 2018. So
If you could go to the, I think the next slide, maybe. Our next meeting is actually going to be Wednesday, February 15th. Again, it's going to be a webinar. And during that meeting is when we will hopefully elect a chair and a chair-elect. So if you are very interested in that position or you want to nominate someone else, please let me know so that I can reach out to that person and we don't put them on the spur of the moment. But again, our next meeting is going to be Wednesday the 15th. Sharon Walsh is going to be joining us. She'll be joining us from D.C. She's going to bring us some federal updates with new administration coming in this month. She's hopeful to be able to share maybe what's happening at the national level, what they're hearing, what we can, and it might be too soon, but she can give us as much information as she has available. So, pardon me, before I ask for a motion to adjourn, are there any questions that we here at the state office can try and answer for you? I don't think anybody's typing, so I will open this up then. Is there anyone with a motion to adjourn our meeting today?
John is typing.
John has made a motion.
John has made a motion. Is there a second?
Sarah Aker has
seconded. Sarah Aker seconded it. All those in favor, you can say aye in the chat box or aye over the phone, whichever. I should ask, is there anybody opposed? Okay, with that said, we will adjourn at 11:30. Thank you for your time, and we look forward to meeting again in February, and we'll have the kinks worked out of the technology. Thanks so much.